All right, Dave Portnoy Show. We got our old friend Jerry Thornton, now of WEEI, formerly of Barstool, one of the original four. But before we get to that, of course, this is brought to you by BetDSI. Great gambling time of the year. The Triple Crown, full swing. We get the Preakness Saturday. Nyquist, obviously, huge favorite. I don't know how to bet that race, if we're being totally honest, because Nyquist is going to win the Triple Crown, I think. I think Exaggerator is going to come in second again. You got a lot of new shooters. None of them, I don't think, are any good. Cherry Wine, if you're just going on looks, Gray as the Nantucket Mist. But I think you got to go Nyquist, Exaggerator, Stone Cold Lock again. I don't know how else you do that. A Stone Cold Exactor, I should say. Also, Dave Baseball. Red Sox already lost today. Nothing better than day baseball to make the hours go by, fly by. Not even like you're at work. Presidential election, whatever you want to bet on, BetDSI has it. The UFC is coming up. You got the Olympics coming up, everything. So sign up. If you sign up at BetDSI.com, you get a free $10. Use this code FATHER10. That's, again, the blog Father. That's sort of what we named the show without too much thought. But FATHER10. That's the code. You get a free $10. Bet it on whatever you want. Again, I'm a horse guy. You know, maybe I don't bet it on the Preakness. Maybe I bet it on a different race because there's not a ton of value in that. But again, BetDSI, quick, easy, works great on mobile. I got shut out of the Kentucky Derby. That will never happen to me again. I made a vow. It's so programmed to go TVG, TVG, TVG. Well, TVG broke an hour before the race. My bookie's dead. BetDSI, I'm new, and it's on my fault. So, you know, I'm giving this out, and I got to learn as well. BetDSI, you will never get shut out. I will never be shut out again. BetDSI.com. Use the code FATHER10. Again, FATHER10, you get a free $10. So that's what you got to do. FATHER10 code, live it, love it. Now on to the show. Okay, so as I'm prone to do here, like to tell people what, and again, maybe when the office is ready, this will switch a little bit of the format of the show, because once the office is ready, I want to have different celebrity guests in the studio with me, taking live calls, talking about the events of the day, but basically rotating guests to a degree. At least that's what I'm feeling now. That could change anytime, any place, any moment, like Pat Hill, that old Fresno State coach. But letting people know what I'm up to in my never-ending quest to get Barstool ready for the New York move. So our Facebook account, just a quick little story, our Facebook account has been banned for 30 days. 30 days, Facebook said you can't use your Barstool Sports account. If you're a publisher, that is not a good thing. Essentially what happened, there's this absolute jerk company called Jukin Media. Fairly new company. What they do is they wait for videos to go viral, and then after they go viral, they contact the schmo who made the video, who just made it, stuck it on YouTube, sent it to a site like ours. It's like, hey, here's a funny clip. They wait for it to go viral, and then they contact the person direct and buy the rights. They buy the rights to the video. So let's say this happens. Let's say a stoolie or somebody sends a video to us through Instagram or email or Facebook or however. And it's like, oh, this is a funny video. We post it. We upload it. We do whatever. Thing gets traction, goes around the internet, starts getting hundreds of thousands of views. The video that was sent to us, that was sent to Barstool Sports directly, Jukin will then go buy the rights and then threaten to sue us for publishing the video that they now own. Even though the only reason they know this video exists is because we helped make it go viral. In some instances, because it was sent to us, again, directly. So Jukin's probably a year or two old. It's like a new phenomenon. They're ambulance chasers, and these pop up all the time. They're people looking to take advantage of loopholes and whatnot in the internet, and they're just, you know, they're absolute internet ambulance chasers. So the way we've been doing Facebook, people send us videos. They send us the direct file, or they send them via Instagram, or sometimes they send them YouTube. We rip them so we can put them on Facebook, upload them directly. Well, Jukin, again, been around maybe a year or two, went back over the past, I don't know how many years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever, every video that we've uploaded that has gone viral, they basically issued a copyright complaint. So they hit us with like 100 of them. in a span of a week, Facebook said, hey, we're going to delete your account. You're out for 30 days suspension, blah, blah, blah. So and by the way, Facebook's so huge. We've had a hard time having an account manager, have anybody who even picks up the phone at Facebook. We're a speck of dust to Facebook. Finally, with help with churning, with help with connections, I was able to secure a meeting at Facebook's offices in New York. I show up. I meet a bigwig there who's like, yep, we're excited to work with you. We'll help you. He goes to our Facebook page while I'm in the meeting. Our boy Spags somehow decided that he could write nasty messages to Facebook about Facebook on Facebook, speaking for the entire Barstool company. So he basically had a message. The lead thing on our Facebook page was like, basically, fuck Facebook for deleting our account or suspending our account. The guy is reading it out loud while I'm sitting across the table from him. Not the best start when you're trying to get Facebook on your side. It's one thing, I guess, if I wrote that blog, since I feel like I can do that, I can speak for Barstool. Spags probably shouldn't have done that. Not the best start with Facebook. The suspension ends today, I think around 8:30 or something, and then we'll get our account back. I was able to smooth it over. You'd be surprised. When I got to sing and dance and put on my monkey hat, I did it pretty good. I tried to text Spags on the spot, being like, can we get this down now before I leave the meeting? So that was my Facebook story. That's really all I got in terms of the business side. A bunch of sales meetings, trying to get sponsorships for the bar within the office that we're building. Big packages. Still trying to hire the CEO. That's a never-ending search. Meetings on top of meetings on top of meetings. Great candidates. Just trying to find the person who not only is qualified, but is a cultural fit and understands they're going to be working in a spot that potentially has Nate in a birdcage. And that's something they can live with, deal with, embrace, really. So lots of meetings, trying to blog in between, trying to keep the thing on the tracks and go from there. One of my thoughts right now, I'm thinking, I may random thought this, is whether, you know, I should try to do a truce with the Simmons group. I know I've been talking a lot about that back and forth. I've obviously had my difference with him, but they are sort of an independent company. They have HBO backing them, and they go after the same demo. So am I being stupid by just creating this war as opposed to trying to be like, you know what, let's work together to take down ESPN. Let's work together to make each of us huge. You know, Simmons may laugh at me and have no interest in that, but that's something that I've been thinking about. I may actually blog it tomorrow. I don't know if people saw his, which Big Cat told me about, his promo for his new show, Any Given Wednesday. Not the best promo I've ever seen. He's just not a tough guy. Simmons just not a tough guy. Wants to be a tough guy, not a tough guy. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have a huge audience. Doesn't mean that he's a brilliant writer. Just not an on-screen guy for my taste. But that's one of my things. You know, should I keep burning bridges or should I stop burning bridges? I inherently like to burn bridges. That's kind of how I operate. I'm a burn bridge guy. And then after, be like, where'd the bridge go? How come I can't talk to this guy? And, well, you burned the bridge into the lake. So that's something I got to think about long and hard. I keep pitching these guys. Weebly, it's probably the best fit for an ad we've ever had. I don't even know that Weebly knows how good of a fit it is, to be honest, because I get 1,000 submissions basically a week of people trying to blog for Barstool. And I always say the same thing. Set up your own blog. Send it to me. If it's good, If it's great, much like Jerry did, if it's great, then, you know, we'll get in contact. I always try to find new talent. I always try to find new writers. Weebly is an easy, quick, fast way to set up your own website. Weebly was created with people basically to do this, to try to be their own boss, to be a mini me. You don't need to be a web designer. You don't know how to code. You don't need to know how to code, but you can still create a great looking website, put all your stupid thoughts, like, what is it? That old Creed thoughts. .com/whatever that was from The Office. You can be Creed now. You can put all your mangled thoughts on paper, send them to me. Again, Weebly.com. It's all drag and drop, build, publish your own site. That's how I look at stuff. So if you want to catch my attention, sign up for Weebly, create your website, customize it, update it. You can change it nonstop. All basically, it will look like a Barstool site. So if you want to get on our radar screen or even just want to create your own website, your own business, you want to sell stuff, 30 million people are using Weebly. It's Weebly, Weebly.com. Go Weebly.com/Dave, and you can start for free. Weebly.com/Dave, and that is what I would do if you want to get on my radar screen, or if you want to compete versus us and sell merch, start your own website, Weebly.com/Dave. All right, that's what, who allows this fantastic podcast to exist, so thank you, Weebly. All right, Jerry, you there?
Yeah, you're loud and clear. You hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you good.
Cool.
Sorry, I'm just distracted because someone tweeted at me, and you're probably used to this. I posted a picture. We got new, like, bar. You missed it. We have new Barstool team jackets. They're like old starter jackets. And when we travel in an airport and you have basketball teams and whatnot, you'll have all of us in all sizes and shapes being all uniformed up. But somebody sent, hey, tight pants. The weird penis head outline is strange. I mean, and they're zooming in on that, and they think that's the strange part of this tweet. Anyways, welcome, Jerry. Long time no speak. I actually don't know the last time we spoke off the top. Do you?
In person, it might have been the Super Bowl. And I mean the Super Bowl in Arizona.
Yep. So how is life at WEI?
It's, you know what, Dave? It's good. It's real good. I mean, every day you gotta earn it. And I wake up every morning and have a blog to fill and then 4 hours of radio. And, you know, it would be nice to sort of shut your brain off every day, but at the same time, I got to remind myself, no one's asking me to build brick walls. You know, no one hands me a shovel and says, go to work. It's, hey, we want you to talk about Boston sports every day and chime in between two, like a broadcaster and a journalist, and just crack wise. And I go, it's not a bad life. It's not a bad life for a guy with no training whatsoever.
So, here's a question for you. I'm looking, what do you have to do to get your name on the Dale and Holly show? Is this something that you wake up with every day, that they won't put your name in the headline of the show?
No, wait a minute. It's Dale and Holly with Thornton. That counts, right?
But I mean,
there was a while when it wasn't that. It was just Dale and Holly, and the other name was an afterthought. And, you know, there was a part where I was like, is this odd? Am I just the guest? Am I the third man in the tag team here? And then Ordway comes along, and he gets a show, and he gets his name at the front of the show.
Yeah, I saw that.
So what is that? It's a progression. And, you know, Minahan went through the same thing. A lot of it, I think, just has to do with they don't want to spend the money on the new stationery and the new, signage or whatever. But I've seen the billboards, and it's the three of us with my name on there. At that point, I was cool.
All right. Well, then I'm wrong, because I obviously I'm not in Boston right now. The billboards. I went on the website and looked on the shows. So you should tell your web guy that maybe you should update the shows, because the Ordway thing is updated. Yours is not. Yours still says Dale and Holly.
Yeah, I've done that to the point where there was one time, Dave, when you went on the homepage, you saw all four of the shows, and there were, you know, count Mikey Adams, we're talking, you know, 10 hosts, and there were 9 of them had their picture on there. And it's one of those things, like, when you stick up for yourself, there's a natural reaction that says, well, what does it matter to you? What is the big deal? Well, I don't know. You tell me why he's on there and that guy's on there, but I'm not. So I spoke up, and the squeaky wheel got the grease. And I know you're out of market now, living in New York like the big-time mogul that you are. But every time we come on the air, it's Dale and Holly with Thornton. So instead of an ampersand or a plus sign or a, you know, AND before my name, if it's with, I can live with that.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of, now you're an interesting case, because I consider you a loyal Barstool guy. You went to a place, you've done some things that I would say, I was like, oh, this guy is going on the air with Ordway, and you're going to make your own bones. So I totally got that. You were on the way to basically landing the gig you had here. But like before this one, when Ordway started, he tried to start his own, I forget what exactly it was, but he tried to start his own radio station, an online radio station, right?
It was. It was online and streaming, and then it started to expand a little bit, and he ended up on, like, ESPN, their affiliate in, like, New Hampshire or whatever. So, yeah, as fate would have it, it was from his house, which was literally 5 minutes up the street from the day job I was working when I was still working for you. So he said, "Do you want to come on?" And I, yeah, sure, okay. Well, I mean, whatever. It's experience. It's getting flight hours. And I wasn't getting anything for it. It was just, I was at that stage where if anybody asked me, "Hey, you want to come talk into a microphone?" I would say yes. And I thought if this turns into something, maybe that's my ticket into legitimate media. So it was also with Greg Murphy, who's a friend of mine, just did my podcast on WEI.com. Pete Shepard, who you and I always liked and admired. So weird about the fact that you and him had bad blood, but I thought, you know, maybe that would be settled. And while
do you
I was
ever,
doing his thing.
Do you ever, like, so there's not much of that left at EEI. Really, I think he's the only, well, I don't know that I like one of your co-hosts there. And it all stems from the same incident. Dale Arnold came at me pretty hard during the, when I posted Brady's, his kid's dick. Which, again, I stand by being a joke. But, I mean, I really, is there any, you being a Barstool guy going to EEI, where certainly Ordway now, I still hate. And Ordway, you don't have to say it, Jerry, because I don't want to get you in trouble. I said it when I did the Minahan podcast. He's a liar. Like, that's just a fact. I've heard him lie and twist on what he says happens, even to his old producer, Chach, being like, no, he's lying about, and even Minahan when we did, like, if he's saying we only talked about Bradygate for an hour on the first show, he's lying, which he did. But was there any dynamic, and I don't mean to make this about me, but you know I can do that. Was there any dynamic when you're the Barstool guy? I still think, by the way, our crowd still sort of thinks of you as a Barstool guy, even though you're an EEI guy now, but it's the past history. Was there any talk of that? Like, oh, it's the Barstool guy? Because there was bad blood, not with you, but there was me in that station for a while.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying specifically with management or with Dale Arnold?
Yeah, Arnold, Ordway, I mean, the people you're kind of rolling with.
Yeah, okay. Like, Ordway wasn't there at the time, but when I was doing his show, you and he had that confrontation at Milton's. Right, blogged about, and he gave his version of it. He said he was trying to have a conversation and said, come, you know, he was trying to get you to go on his web show to talk about it. And you were like, no, you come on Barstool to talk about it. You had this, like, standoff. And he insisted that he went back and listened to the tapes. And, you know, his version of the event. So, like, not, you know, this is a friend of mine, which is you, and a guy I work with, which is him, disagreeing on something, but he insisted that he went to the lawyers and they listened to every minute of tape, and that what you were saying, that he suggested people will go beat you up, never happened.
Right.
And I've never really gotten your version of that.
Yeah, well, so there's a couple versions. There was a caller who basically, and there were a couple, who called and said that I deserve to have my, like, head bashed in with a baseball bat. And he didn't specifically say, yes, that he wasn't like, yes, that should happen. He also was like, well, you know, he doesn't have a kid. So he wasn't exactly being like, you can't say that stuff. And it was a 2-day stream, by the way, of people calling. I've always said to them, I said it in real time, probably when you were still working here, hey, the beauty of having tapes is we can just play them for everybody and we can see what has been said. EEI, him specifically, his producers, whoever they may be, came up with a million reasons under the sun why these clips couldn't be produced. So again, I said to him, you send me the clips, I'll play them. I'll play them. I won't. I will play them exactly. We'll see what was said. So that was one component of it. The bigger thing that I was going back on is he was just saying that they only talked about it for like an hour. He's like, we didn't beat it to death. It was the first hour of a show. He was trying to say he wasn't even there for the second day that they let off with the show, which was just total garbage. So
I remember it being you being the number one topic in the city for those days. It, not the only time you've been, but that in particular, you know, you were it. I don't know what time of year it was, but I imagine it was one of those times you go through in radio where there's nothing compelling to talk about. And
right.
So when a story like that drops on your lap and it's hot button and it's polarizing, you jump all over it. Now, as far as Dale goes, you know, understand, I was dropped in with these guys. They were trying out all these different third co-hosts. Dale and Michael, who have been together for years, and I was just doing it because, hey, I can and I'm being asked to. I didn't realize it was an audition process for a permanent third host. And early on, like right at the beginning, we talked about it. He acknowledged, you know, you're a Barstool guy. They hate me over there. Portway hates me, you know. And I said, well, I can tell you, I've never written a bad word about you. Now, as far as that incident, he had to take that a lot of people did. He just thought you crossed the line and you were inappropriate. He never said, and by the way, he's an a-hole. I can't stand that guy. How can you work with him? It was never that. I just said, just so you know. Like, I didn't post that. If I had seen that picture before Dave did, I probably wouldn't have. Not because it's child pornography like you got accused of. Because it wasn't. No way was it. That picture was out there. You didn't take it. You know, you weren't hiding in the bushes or whatever. I just wouldn't have written it because I have a general no-wang policy.
Right,
you know, whether it's a toddler or an adult, that's just my thing. I wouldn't have. You know, that's something that I would have held short on.
Yeah,
but
I think the people
who said it was child pornography would demagogue the hell out of it.
Yeah, I've never had a problem with people who disagreed. And even if our guys on, like, if you were like, I wouldn't have posted, I don't have a problem with that. My issues post with WEI was what Ordway says happened. And prior to that was I was actually on Dennis and Callahan when this all went down, and then they said they didn't have my phone number, and that's why they didn't let me defend myself. So again, it was just something. It's like, I'm on in the morning, guys. Jerry texted me and said he didn't think it was being handled the right way. So to hear them say they didn't have my phone number and that's why I couldn't defend myself, that didn't sit overly well with me. And I found out that I was kicked off my free gig with Dennis and Callahan by a press release. Like Jason Wolf, he never called me. He never texted me. It's like this Atlanta Braves manager today. I found out because I read it on a newspaper that I'm basically a scumbag and don't represent EEI, even though it was my own. Like, I wasn't really representing EEI, but that's a different story. One thing I'm certainly jealous of you is you get your access. You've talked to, it's a different world because when obviously you're working for us and you and I are both obviously gigantic. I don't want to say Patriot homers because you and I think both agree we're right 99% of the time. So I don't think that makes you a homer. That just makes you right. But you get to talk to Bill. You get to talk to Brady. What's been the best part of that? What's that like?
Oh, boy. Without question was the first day where I was full time. And so it was around like Thanksgiving of, you know, 2014, my first day where I've left my old job and I'm starting this, and it's Patriots Monday, and we broadcast it from a studio right inside Gillette Stadium. So these guys fill my head full of a lot of, you know, tips about how to deal with Belichick, who, as much as you and I would both take a bullet for him, we have to acknowledge he is the most difficult media, you know, sports figure to deal with. So it's like, you can't ask a dumb question. He'll kill you for it. You can't ask a question where you're trying to prove how smart you are. He'll just completely tell you how wrong you are. And past hosts have made that mistake. So I'm like, all right, great. So don't be smart. Don't be dumb. Well, this will be easy. So Dave, I go into it, a four-year-old about to meet the mall Santa for the first time. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be delighted, if I'm going to, like, wet my pants, if I'm going to just scream and cry or whatever. And so he walks in, he shakes my hand, and we go on the air, and Dale introduced him. He says, Dale, good to see you. Michael, good to see you. And Jerry, It's an honor to finally meet you. That is a true story. I said he's my favorite human being who doesn't have the last name as me or appear on my tax return. Like, we end the interview, and he finishes with, "And guys, good to see you. Thanks again, Jerry. I can't wait till we get to do this again." So, F all these media people talk about how tough he is and how prickly he is. There are days where we go in and we'll ask him questions, and you know he's not being expansive. And my reaction isn't, "How dare he? He's disrespecting me." Dave, I'm grinning ear to ear when he's like that, because I get it. When you ask him a question and he gives you sort of an evasive answer, he's not talking to you. He's talking to his team. He's talking to his owner. He's talking to the opponents. He's talking to opposing coaches. So he's measured. He's guarded. And then sometimes he's expansive, and that's what's fascinating about him. But I come from the perspective of everything he says, and this is why I liked him from the beginning, he says with one thing in mind, and that's, how do I win a Super Bowl? And so
totally
through me and my answer, my question, or whatever, he's just, that's what he's doing. It's calculated, and I love him for it.
And I also think the Patriots for sure know who their I guess, their friendly media folk are and who they're not friendly media folk. And, you know, I didn't even realize it, both when you were here and after. You know, the Patriots know Barstool is very pro-Patriot. I'm sure they know you are very pro-Patriot. I actually think EEI is pro-Patriot. It's changed. When we started, and this is going way back, but there were far fewer kind of, you know, Belichick disciples, I'd say, who will take his side no matter what in the local media. Now I think most do. You have Felger who, and Maz, obviously, who basically go the opposite. But other than that, I mean, Zolak, like, for example, Zolak was not – the Zolak's pro-Patriot stuff is relatively new. That's like a year or two, I'd say, that I remember him being on the scene as you know, beating the drum just as loudly as you and I. In the beginning, though, there weren't – it wasn't nearly what it is now. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still those holdouts. Most of them are from the dinosaur media. I mean, I've talked to Ron Borges, who is kind of the patron saint of the anti-Belichick movement. And I've done a little bit of TV with him. I do, you know, Comcast Sports Tonight. I was with him the night the Wells report hit. And he's like, "What do you think of that? Yeah, you explain to me. What's going on with that guy in the bathroom for 90 seconds? Like, I said, "I think he was peeing, Ron. I think he was peeing."
Is there legitimate bad blood? Is there, like, when you see a guy like Borges, or I'm curious, I don't know if you've seen any of this take that we've had with Shaughnessy's now hates Jared Garibus for some reason.
Yeah, I'm watching that. Yeah.
Which is it's bizarre.
With Borges, it's not, because having met him, he's a guy who'll dish it out and he'll take it, and he's just a crusty old fart, and I respect him in that respect. Like, 5 minutes after the TV lights are off, we're in the green room and we're talking like golf or whatever, and I barely know the man. But Shaughnessy is someone I think really truly resents the existence of guys like me, you, and Jared Carabas, because he is a product of a world where the media and the sports around here were an upside-down pyramid with guys like him at the top, and Belichick flipped that over. You know, you can't abuse him anymore because he's better at the game than you, and he's got a proven track record. And Shaughnessy hates it. He hates guys like us because we didn't come up through journalism class, and we're not the six guys in town who set the agenda. We came from nothing, and the internet has made it is a meritocracy. You know, it's the most democratic thing in the world. If Carabas wasn't a really good baseball analyst, no one would read him. You know,
right.
if you didn't start a website that was both contrarian and entertaining, and by the way, right, people would have said, "Who are these a-holes?" And they would have stopped writing. Shaughnessy doesn't exist in that world, and he can't handle it. So he's always going to resent the fact that guys like us exist. He wants it to be 1975 all over again.
Yeah, it was a strange shot at Jared in the sense that I know I threw a lot more grenades at people and you sometimes with like the Borges when you're covering the Patriots and all the Patriot haters. I don't think Jared was kind of just being minding his own business and covering the Red Sox, which he's done almost for 10 years. Very similar to you. We still get that. You know, how do people, like, how do we write for Barstool? How do we get on the radar screen? No different than Jared's doing on his own or when, you know, we found you. You send the articles like, oh, this guy's great, and there's all this unfound talent. One of the great keys, and I was trying to get my goal for this podcast was originally I wanted to get not only yourself, who's gone on, obviously, to build this great career, but Jamie Chisholm and Manzo together, which is really the original four. Manzo has not surprisingly been very difficult to pin down. I think I should have expected that, but you get a better chance of getting the Pope, it seems like, to be like, yep, I can do a half an hour or whatever. So, but it's, you know, the talent that the internet has provided, because we've almost had two waves of writers. We had that group, that original four, which to this day, I'd put my money on saying that was as good a crew as you would ever find. And probably if the timing of Barstool was different, that would be the crew that we were running with now. But in the early days of the internet, it could barely keep the lights on. Everyone was working for free. And at some point, people had to make decisions on, you know, do I have to do the full-time job? Do I, what do I do here? And then kind of the second wave being the Kevins and the Big Cats came along, and it changed from the paper to the blog. But Barstool's been blessed, and it's been blessed with people that would never get jobs in the mainstream media if the internet didn't exist. That's the great equalizer. It's what you said. It's if you're good, you can find a way to scratch and claw your way to the top, which is what I did, which is what you did, and really the guys we have now doing. And you're right, Shaughnessy, for some reason, hates that.
Oh, because it's a threat to him. You know, he's a typewriter manufacturer, and laptops are coming out, and he can't process. I mean, he's a guy that will not be the least bit shy about saying Twitter is where people talk about what they, you know, had for lunch. Really? Okay, terrific. Just keep making your, you know, your references to, you know, 1978 comedies and, you know, and Born in the USA or whatever it is that he references, and just go extinct. That's fine, because this is the world that we live in, and you adapt or you die. And, you know, funny when you mention those original four writers, I mean, I stumbled onto your site like by accident, really, and you were looking for writers, and I sent you a sample and you accepted it, and I think it was months before we met, and I said, you ever get people that, you know, want to write for you and you turn them down, and you're like, I get like 10 a week, and imagine now you get like 10,000 a day.
Yeah, the hardest part is actually now, it's how do you manage the submissions to make sure, you know, the next Jerry, the next Manzo, the next Big Cat doesn't slip through. That's now the hardest part, because it was night and day, obviously, since we started. Now, I know one big loss, I know two big losses since you moved to WEEI. One is strictly a Barstool loss, and two is a world loss. So, obviously, we don't have your Monday, the recaps, the knee-jerk reactions. And people always ask, it's a consistent, I get it every day, when are you going to hire the next Jerry? When are you going to hire the replacement? I think we have very high standards. I've said, Jerry, when you work for us, and I thought you should have gotten the Herald job, I think you're the best Patriot writer in the city. And it takes a Jared Karabas-type guy who, the reason we weren't covering the Red Sox, we're waiting for that next person, that up-and-comer who hits it on the head. I'm not going to replace Jerry with just somebody who's not as good doing the same thing as Jerry. So we wait. We'd love to have it. That's just a loss that happened. You can go read all his stuff still on WEI.com.
The phonography blog. I'm still writing the same. And I still meet, you know, guys who will say, hey, Michon Barso. I go, I'm writing the same stuff, only, you know, you can log on at work and probably not get in trouble with your boss. But thank you for the plug. I appreciate it.
Well, the other thing that everybody lost because you got shut down was the teacher sex scandals. A huge blow for the internet. They told you you couldn't do that, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't even so much as absolutely no, you can't. It was more like I waited months, and I waited till I established a sonography blog as something viable and something that would get enough hits. Because, you know, leaving the comfort zone of Barstool, it's a little terrifying. Like, what if no one's reading my crap and I'm just talking to myself and it's a failure or whatever? But I really wanted that writing component to go with the radio thing because I didn't want to do just one or the other. So after a few months, going established, I the first one, and they management heard from a sports media person who just said, my bosses are asking me about this thing that's on there. And they said, oh, well, we're going to take that off. And this guy, to his credit, said, well, that's good, because I like Jerry. I'm a fan of his work. I didn't want to have to go after him. So apparently, Dave, there are people out there who still think that a hot female teacher seducing her teenage male student is kind of rapey. We can disagree on that, but the real loss here, the real victims to me, are those teachers who aren't being celebrated the way that they were before.
Yeah, you know, it's a glaring hole right now in the internet. Other people were doing it for a while, but I feel like they were almost doing it. They'd wait for your lead, and then it would follow. It is definitely a big thing. Now, Jerry, we're going to take some calls, but before I do that, one of the funniest Thornton stories that I have, all right, is so we, early days Barstool, we would, you know, we always threw events because that was how we kind of made our money. The biggest event we ever threw was this thing called the White Party. It was at the old Marina Bay. It was at, what was the name of that place? Ocean Club?
Water Club?
Waterworks.
Waterworks, that's it. Yep.
Waterworks. Okay. So we had a big, there were 2,000-3,000 people there, people dressed to the tens. People are partying. It's really going well. The owners of the club come up to me, and they say, hey, we just threw one of your guys out. One of your guys is out of here. I'm like, one of our guys? I've never had a problem with any of our guys in the history of doing Barstool. They're like, yep, it's Thornton. He's out in the street. I go, Jerry, are you sure we're talking about the same guy here? They go, yeah, we had to throw him out. So I didn't believe him all the way till they walked me into the parking lot, and Jerry is standing there in the parking lot, kicked out of the White Party. To this day, I still don't know what happened.
Yeah, okay. So briefly, I was always one of these things is not like the other of Barstool. I mean, you had these young guys, you know, you and Chisholm and Manzo and Uncle Buck, and I was the married guy with the kids, and so I was hesitant to ever even go to one of the parties, and you insisted, because I don't want to be that guy, you know, I don't want to look like a guy, you know, to go back to an old, like, PC game. I didn't want to be Leisure Suit Larry. You know, like, what's that? If I have one gift in this world, it's self-awareness. So I started going to the parties, and they started getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And like Manzo said, that one in particular was like a Vegas party. When he and I said we knew that we had arrived as an entity. Well, I brought two platonic female friends who I had met because my old job was at the court system. And one of them was in as a defendant in a case where she was had supposedly beaten up her baby daddy, who was like 100 pounds heavier than her, whatever. So I explained to him what Barstool is, and I'm showing him, you know, Uncle Buck's wake-up stuff, and here's this, like, you know, kind of racy, smutty site. And they loved it. They decide, we want to come to a party with you. So sure, okay, I'm so sure. Quincy's real convenient. Why don't you come to this one? So they went off the rails and started making out with each other. I mean, tops were off, you know, boobs were in mouths. I was just there. One of them gives me their phone, says, take pictures. There's a crowd around. I guess, according to the bouncer, and there's one lesson that I'd already learned to this point, being a responsible adult with two kids, is cooperate with bouncers. Even when they're in the wrong, just, okay, sure. So I'm holding one of their phones, taking pictures for them. He says, you got to go. I'm like, but I'm here. You got to go. So now I'm stuck outside, and because these were exactly the kind of dingbatty girls that end up in court and with boobs in each other's mouths in public, like, they were irresponsible and stayed in there. So I was stuck for like an hour, and I couldn't call them because their phones were in my pocket. So I'm like, I'm not nearly drunk enough to be kicked out of something. I'm a victim of circumstance, but whatever. And yeah, and you found me and just said, I just never thought it would be you.
I never thought it would be. Never thought it would be you. A funny side note before I take the calls. Also, still to this day, one of the all times that you brought up Uncle Buck, which I know he's doing some stuff at EEI. His wake ups are still, every once in a while, you'll hear in dark alleys the whispers of just how involved his wake ups were. Another thing that I don't think anybody was as dedicated to the craft as Uncle Buck, putting together the wake-ups that were literally, if you read us back in the day, hundreds of, if any girl we ever did a gallery in the morning ever had a picture of her taken at any point in her adult life, it was in the wake-up. It could have been a personal photo from her camera that Uncle Buck somehow got. Anyways, let's take some of the calls here. We'll start, see how this goes. Dave, you there?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yep.
All right. I'm good. Thanks for asking. Jerry, got a question for you. Hopefully you have some specifics. What was the worst part of working for Portnoy?
Okay, easy. It was writing something. Now, keep in mind, I'm working at a full-time job at a place that doesn't have Wi-Fi. So I'm using my phone as a mobile hotspot and writing blogs like as quick as I can when no one's looking or we're on my lunch hour or whatever, and I'd write these things and I'd get it done and then it wouldn't get posted. Or Feidelberg would take it and he would basically write the exact same thing, only take credit for it. And it drove me up a wall and I got really snarky about it.
So wait, you think Feidelberg, based on what you just said, you think Feidelberg was reading your takes and then basically plagiarizing them into his own words and publishing them himself.
No. Like once in a while, I would find a topic and I'd post it. And I don't mean to make this an indictment of him because I've met the kid and he's great. And I like him and he does an amazing job.
Throw shots, Jerry. The more shots you take at people here, the happier I am. So you can take shots at anybody you want.
But no, I mean, I used to get furious about him, like, because he came along way after me. Like, who is this kid? You know what I mean? Like, I was I was Jack Lemmon and Glengarry Glen Ross. Like, what? What do you mean? I can't have coffee? Like, what the hell?
And that is an ongoing thing that I'm sure at times makes writers upset, which is, and what Jerry's referring to is, so we have the pipeline essentially for a lot of it. And part of the problem we had, Jerry, with as we grew with that exact dynamic is, he was full-time. I was full-time. We were adding more full-time writers. As you said, as you just described, you were writing from the courthouse on a not Wi-Fi. So by the time you were getting your stories, they had been blogged 3 days beforehand, and you hadn't realized it. That also was a major factor.
That happened. Yeah, that happens sometimes, too. And believe me, through the passage of time, now that like I've got a space to fill of my own every day, you know, I kind of get it. Like, someone will send me a video, and it's like, yeah, I just did a Gronkowski thing, and now is not the time for it. I'd rather have a non-sports thing. So a big picture now I can deal with it, but that drove me nuts. That and just your general brutal negativity, you know, which is an asset, but you were never shy about saying, you know, when we were in the media bowling league, You didn't hesitate to say, Manzo, you're choking. You're supposed to be a good bowler. And that I think you do in all aspects of your life, including to your writers when they write something that's subpar.
That media bowling league, again, that's why I wish we had Manzo Chisel. That was something else.
Well, Manzo gets a lot of podcast offers. You got to understand. Like, he's not just going to accept every, like, you know, Johnny OneNote that comes along and says, hey, do my nationally recognized podcast, Pete. You can go on Adam Carolla, but you can't get Manzo.
All right. What do we got from Ian?
Hey, Dave.
Hey.
Hey, what's up, Ian?
I just called for a couple things. First one was for you, Jerry. I got into Barstool like 3-4 years ago, and I just really wanted to say thanks for the great Pats coverage. The sex scandal teaser blog is obviously hysterical, but I loved waking up Monday morning and firing up those Pats blogs. I still love, you know, I love to read the Greeny blogs and the Caribous blogs, big Boston sports fans, and so that coverage there was really much appreciated.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you appreciating it. I started writing those things for PatriotsPlanet.com. It was a message board. I just did it as an outlet, and like I sent one to Dave, and he said, I like these. Keep them coming. And I didn't really, I probably owe my career to those goofy things.
And second thing was actually for you, Dave. I go to boarding school over in the southwest corner of Massachusetts. You know, we got a lot of kids from New York here, a lot of kids from Connecticut. So I just was wondering if you could give a quick shout out to Berkshire School and the Pats fans over there that are defending the wall.
I absolutely won't do that. I mean, I am obviously a fan of Patriots, but we're not going to divulge or digress this segment into shout-outs to some schools in Western Mass. What do we got, James?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up, James?
Hey, so I feel like you and Dave are kind of the leaders of the Free Tom Brady campaign here and Defend the Wall. So if you guys ever ran into Roger Goodell, what would you say to him?
Jeez, I've already said I want to tackle him, and I'm not joking on that. That's how upset I am. Jerry, I'll let you answer, and I also have a question for you. I haven't come to grips with the fact that he's going to miss any games yet. Like, I don't know what I think is going to happen, but I just can't rationalize that that's actually going to happen. Where are you on this thing?
It's amazing to try to realize that that's our reality right now. The latest development on this, and this comes from Florio, who's also a lawyer, is that for some weird Byzantine, obscure legalese way, it might all get decided by Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself, by herself. Some 80-year-old is somehow in charge of the court that hears this, and it may just be up to her in some kind of appeal thing. I don't know. It's bizarre. And I guess if I had to wager, I'd say it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo through September. But I'm holding out hope. As far as what I'd say to Goodell, see, you can't say anything to him because he uses his own boring demeanor as like a defense mechanism. It's like a deflector shield. He's an automaton. He's the girl from Small Wonder. You can't talk to him. You can't rationalize with it. So
Small Wonder, the girl who Eve who puts her fingers together.
That is, did he put her fingers together? The robot daughter, right? In the worst sitcom of all time?
I'm thinking the girl who, Eve, she puts her fingers together and, like, stops time.
Okay. I'm thinking of the sitcom where the girl and they would take the control panel off her back and there were just lights in there.
I don't know.
Look it up. It's
old man Thornton. I don't know what
we're
talking about.
No, I know. Stop us before we self-reference again. But you would never get an answer. If I was going to ask him a question and thought one answer out of him, I guess what would it be? I'd say, does air come out of footballs naturally? It really comes down to that, Dave. No matter what else anyone wants to say about the deflator text and why was he in the bathroom, no air was out of the footballs.
Right.
It just didn't happen. And when you talk about that text, you're saying that if I text you the word, called myself murderer, in a text to you like a year ago, and I got convicted of murder, not without a body, not without a weapon, not without which is circumstantial evidence, just no murder took place. And that's
yeah,
what
no,
we're talking
I
about.
Agree.
And for that,
but yeah, I also agree with you. There's nothing you could say to Goodell. I mean, he I think that's a fair description of him. He's got his shield up, and it's impossible. That's why I would say, you know, I'd tackle him. I'd like one time for him to do an interview though with somebody who's not just ball washing him. Andrew, what do you got?
Hey, Dave, I got one not point on that whole Shaughnessy thing. The funniest fucking thing he said in his whole piece was, oh, you got to be in the locker room to say, you know, report on these athletes, everything like that. Carrabba said it perfectly in his podcast today. He said, he said the two most influential media members in the Boston market are Dave Portnoy and Michael Felger. And they're not in any locker room. I just thought that was perfect for that, because Shaughnessy, you know, he's a fucking dinosaur. I don't really give a shit what he says.
Yeah.
But, Jerry, I just have one quick question for you. What would be the dollar amount for you to come back to Barstool to cover Pats full-time? Because if I have to read one more fucking season of Pats blogs that just say, the Pats are great, everybody else sucks, Brady goat, I'll want to chug a quart of bleach. I just want to know the number on that.
What would be the dollar figure? Well, I don't want to reveal the dollar figure. It would be, you know, substantially more than I'm making now, because I like what I do. But let's see. I got a contract coming up just like everybody else, and I like to think that I left on the best possible terms, and you always leave bridges built behind you. Right?
But, Jerry, we talked about it a little bit. Even when you left, I was under the impression, obviously we're in a very different stage now, but my impression when you left is you were going to something that even if I wanted, I mean, obviously I guess you get to some level of salary where it changes it, but say it was comparable, even if we were a little more, EEI offered you the radio. At the time, we really didn't have anything remotely similar. Now we're changing a little bit, but we probably still won't in the Boston market. We're going to do, but even terrestrial radio, that's not something we'll ever be able to offer anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah, no, that was a great opportunity. And if they just said, we only want you to write, deal killer. If they said, we only want you to be on the radio, I would have missed the ability to write. Because there's just some things that aren't funny on the radio, but are hilarious, or you know, online, or you know, videos, that kind of thing. I never really strongly considered going to Barstool full-time for the reason that all the boring reasons, having, you know, a mortgage and two kids, and, you know, I'm not Carrabba's. I don't know what his life situation is, but I imagine health insurance was never like his biggest priority like it was for me. And I went to a corporation that offered all those things, like, okay, so this is legit. So, you know, you're never stop looking for a job. That's a rule for life, not just life in the sports media. And then, you know, people have asked me all the time, like, ah, do you regret going? Like, you know, they hit it big. I'm like, well, first of all, I was a part-time employee, you know, throwing my stuff on the page, you know, on the WordPress page, like you deposit a check at the drive-thru at the bank, you know, it would just get sucked up into there and I'd check my account later. But I feel like Barstool the way Tom Brady feels about Michigan. And notice the subtle way I just compared myself to Tom Brady.
Yeah, and everything you said, by the way, is a fair comparison. It's a very, like, Carrabba's has health insurance, so we have health insurance now. Now, when you left, we did not. I didn't have it. It's a very different situation, and I've thought about it. And again, we're year-round, so we don't have the radio thing, so it's, are you covering other teams? It's a lot of things, but it's certainly something as we continue to grow. And to be honest, I don't know that Barstool is necessarily headed towards that type of regional coverage anyway. So, but the timing never really made it like, okay, we're going to keep Jerry versus him going to EEI. It would have been a conversation if we were where Barstool is now, and because obviously we have more resources, so that changes it. Ryan.
And no regrets.
Yeah. Ryan, what do you got?
I'm curious to hear Jerry's thoughts on the morning show constantly trolling him. John Penis and Kirk do not stop with talking shit about Jerry. I want to hear his thoughts on that because it doesn't end.
Yeah, and there's nothing to it. It's shtick. I mean, those same guys went to bat for me. I used to do their show. I was the first guy off the bench when they needed somebody. The only thing that stopped that was when either I couldn't take time off from my old job or when I was on the afternoon show. So it's just that. Like, I'd rather not have people say that I suck, but it's just radio fodder. And, you know, those same guys, like, you see them, you talk to them, they're friendly. We've texted. And also do the math on how many people on the air that they don't hate.
What's your thoughts on the state of the Boston sports media? I think universally I hear most people say Felger right now is the top dog. You agree with that? What are your thoughts? How do you think it shakes out?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. I mean, I'm proud of the fact that the show I'm on, you know, before I was there, months before I was there, was like sometimes eighth in the market, and they had previous management that made horrible mistakes. And Felger has this, like, death grip on that market, but we've gotten up to number two. And the last book we got, you know, the last weekly, we were really, really close. And Felger did a lot for me. I mean, Felger and Naz don't do guests. And they used to have me on a weekly basis. You know, pretty much their guest list is me and Cam Neely for a long time there.
Yeah, and you were great on that. You were great on that, and that's really where it started. Felger has been good to us. Felger has been the biggest Barstool advocate probably in the Boston sports media before he became big, after he became big, but he's been good to us, so I have a soft spot for him. Dave, what do you got?
Same here.
Sorry.
Hey, what's up, boys?
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Hey, how's it going? All right, I got a Mary Fuck Kill for you. Shaughnessy, Goodell, and Ron Borges.
Oof. Oh boy, it's going to be hard not to kill Goodell. It's really going to be hard to.
That's a no-brainer for me. You kill Goodell I'm going to go based on what you said, because those two guys to me are equally despicable. But you basically said through more personal knowledge that you don't think Ron Borges is nearly as despicable as Shaughnessy. So
yeah,
I'll marry. I don't know what's better.
Gorgeous.
I don't know
I mean, it's going to be a bit of a lemon party with Borges anyway. But I'll say this. He's a guy who can dish it out and take it. And what's the greatest sin in the world is a guy like who can dish out but can't take it. Bill Simmons, as an example. And
totally
that's Shaughnessy to the core. My first day on the job, he wrote a column ripping, like, whatever happened to sports media in this town, where you've got a fanboy, quote-unquote, comedian on the air. And I ripped him for that to the point where he violated his own company rule and came on the morning show to defend himself, and the vice president of the company just came to me and said, is this what you do? Like, one day you've been here? he came after
that.
So, yeah. You don't want to marry him.
That's always what I said about the Barstool effect when I got fired from the Brady thing. It's the old Batman quote. Like, EEI's ratings were so bad, that's why they turned to us at the time. I'm sure, to a degree, that's why they turned to you, because you had your following. But it's like, in their times of need, they turned to a man they didn't quite understand. Let's
and
wrap.
In their desperation, they did business with a man they did not understand. Yeah, I remember you using that quote. And it was the perfect usage of a movie quote, which I respect.
Thank you. Last one, because this guy's been on for a while, so we'll wrap it up here. Josh, what do you got?
Hey, Dave. Hey, Jerry.
Hey.
First, you made it seem like being a homer is a bad thing. I don't think it is, but I feel like you and Jerry are definitely homers.
Well, here's what I mean by that. It's almost like when people, if you say you're in denial and you're not in denial, and somebody's like, well, of course you are. That's what someone's not in denial. I honestly think I look objectively, and I'll let Jerry speak for himself, at most of the Patriot things. But the Patriots have been so good for 15 years. So when someone says you're a homer, to me, that is defending somebody or saying things about a team that is you're seeing it through rose-colored glasses, which I've killed the Red Sox at times. I've killed the Celtics at times. The Patriots have done almost nothing. And I don't think you can look at a specific play and say, hey, Belichick should have, you know, punted against the Colts instead of gone for it. Like, to me, that's not really a real criticism. I mean, I guess it is, but so a homer means there's not truth. I guess that's where I differentiate. Like, I obviously root for the Pats, but I'd criticize them if I thought they were worthy of being criticized. Jerry?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, for an unprecedented period of time, they have had unprecedented success in a league that mandates that you can't be that successful for this long. All the rules are set up so so that you can't be as good as they have been. And in that time, they've won 4 Super Bowls. They've been to 6. They've been to Brady's career, 14 years as a starter. He's been to 10 AFC championship games. So if you defend that team against attacks coming from all directions like ninjas, and you're called a homer, no, you're just being accurate. And add to it the Deflategate thing, which was a witch hunt from day one. You know, oh, DeQuell Jackson caught this ball, and he said, hey, this ball feels squishy. No, that didn't happen. That's a fallacy. So those of us who are defending the wall, they just have perspective. And, Dave, you know, thank you for writing the blurb for the back of my book, which is about the first 40 years of the Patriots, how horrible they were. It's coming out this fall. They were dysfunctional. Guys were getting arrested. The coaches were terrible. The owners were the worst in sports. Their stadium was a laughingstock. And so through all that, now they've turned into the model franchise in the number one sport in America. If you're ripping them during this era, then there's something wrong with you. That's a you problem, not a them problem. So I'm proud to defend them the way you have, Dave. That doesn't make us homers. That just means we've got a brain in our head and some kind of perspective about how good this is.
Right. And the point I have, I don't know your take on it, but I have actually been at times critical of Robert Kraft and the way he's handled Deflategate.
Yep.
So, I mean, again, a homer wouldn't necessarily do that, but I think he's been kind of wishy-washy at times through this, and I've read that. So, I mean, I've said that. Before we go, you threw in the quick pitch about the book,
yep.
But give them more details on the book. When is it coming out? What's the name of it? All that. I'm sure it's going to be unbelievable.
Oh, thanks. I got reached out to by a book agent when I was still working for you, this big firm down in New York, and wanted to have me write a book, and I was interested, and we decided, you know, what to write about, and I said, there's a book I've always wanted to see written, and nobody has, so screw it, I'll write it, and it's called From Darkness to Dynasty, and it's all those crazy-ass, dysfunctional, bizarre stories about the Patriots' existence right up until Adam Vinatieri hit against St. Louis. So it's, you know, how Michael Jackson bankrupted them. It's how the, you know, the stands that caught fire. It's how they had a home game in Birmingham, Alabama. But it's also semi-autobiographical. It's growing up in Weymouth, Massachusetts, when they were my favorite team in all of Boston sports, even though they were this, you know, fly-by-night, like, terribly run operation. So I think it's good if you live through those days. I think it's even better if you've grown up during this era to let you know just how bad it was. Because I will call it this day the number one, the biggest all-time turnaround in any franchise in any sport. To go from as bad as they were to dominating the sports landscape for a decade and a half and counting, and still going strong, has never happened to any other team to the extent it's happened to them. So it's available for pre-order on Amazon. It's going to be at bookstores everywhere around the start of the football season.
All right, I'm going to leave you with this last one. And I've had this debate. It just popped into my head. I'm curious your take. I know my answer. I've always had my answer. You have one pick. You're starting the franchise over, all right? Who do you take, mm-hmm. Belichick or Brady?
Oof. Oh, man. Really a tough call. It's Sophie's choice. I'm going to go with Belichick for this reason. I think he made Brady in large measure. If Brady had been drafted by the Rams, he never would have turned into Brady. They can say, oh, Belichick never won without him. I think he would have found a way. He would have found a quarterback and built a great team anyway with his system and his way of managing the cap and his ability to get something out of nothing. It's a tough call, but I'm going with Belichick. How about you? What is your answer?
Totally agree. Agree with everything you just said. I mean, obviously, it's one of the hardest decisions probably since Earth was created.
Yeah.
But I really think they win. I think Belichick wins no matter where he is. And I just think, like what you said, not only Brady, like Joe Montana, if he doesn't end up in the right spot, you know, I just feel like Belichick is that good of a coach. And I think that is actually the most important the only sport like that where the head coach, that is your A number one. That is the most important. And you almost look at what happened to the Cowboys when they had Jimmy Johnson and, you know, they couldn't get along, him and the owner. They fell apart pretty quickly, but they still had talent, but they kind of fell apart. So I agree with you.
The beautiful thing is we live in the universe where we didn't have to worry about that. Because we got them both, and it's been symbiotic, and the two of them, you know, think the same thoughts and are on the same page. Brady subjugates himself to the coach, where he could have had the ego and demanded all the money, and you got to do things my way or whatever. So, yeah, we're blessed to have the Holy Trinity, you know, those two and the owner. But if you had to pick one, yeah, you're going with the coach.
All right, Jerry, it was great catching up. We'll have to do it again. Keep getting on here time to time, and best of luck everything moving forward with EEI.
Hey, I had a blast, and Viva La Stool. I still talk to guys all the time who ask about you, and you know, what do you like and whatever. But I know that working for you springboarded me to where I am now. I like what I'm doing. I like the guys that I work with, and I still miss you guys. So if you want to have me back on, I'd love to do it.
All right, great. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Val.